Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
I'm super excited for today's show and for my guest, Naveen. I'm going to let her introduce herself in a minute, but let me just give the audience a little bit of backstory about why I'm excited. A lot of things have changed in the past 18 months, and I think sometimes we get so focused on the change, we actually forget to think about the impact that it has on us as leaders, as businesses, as consumers. And today's guest is going to help us make sense of it all and where we're headed. So, Naveen, thank you so much for joining me today. Why don't you tell the audience just a little about your work and your perspective so they can get to know you, and then we'll dig in from there.
Thank you, Tamara. Thank you for having me. So I'm Naveen Alwaraki. I'm part of Accenture Interactive. I lead consumer goods and services for Accenture Interactive in Europe. I started my life in Unilever, which is one of the big consumer goods companies, before joining Accenture. So yeah, bit of a practitioner as well as on the Accenture side now.
So another time we're going to have to talk about, I've done a lot of work for Unilever, Procter & Gamble, all of them over my years in new product development. So way, way back in the day. Yeah, yes. So I get the language. All right, so here's I want to start big picture and drill down from there. You know, a lot has changed in 18 months, and we don't need to belabor every little thing, but you know, everything from work from home to how we think about our health, I mean, all of it has changed.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating too is I think we've drastically changed as consumers, right? How we buy, how we spend, how we make decisions. You're the expert in that. So will you tell us a little bit about our own behavior? How have we as consumers changed in the past 18 months?
Good. What's important to us, I think we can all identify with that. So our research suggests that people have reacted to the statement of I've reconsidered what my purpose is, what's important to me in life, by saying yes, predominantly across the world, across demographics. So people have thought what's important to them, have reconsidered what's important, and are making different decisions in life based on it.
So how does that impact our shopping? Because I'm just going to give you, as consumers, I want to give you just two extreme examples. Funny enough, both conversations I had this morning. One friend said to me, we're at the gym, and she said, I'm going to stop spending money because I've realized what matters to me is experiences. Stop spending money on clothes. What matters to me is experiences, to your point. Like her purpose, her values have changed. And then another one said to me, I have nothing else to do, so I keep shopping online, right? In the same conversation, they both said that. So will you just help me make sense a little bit about, like, we change our purpose, I get that, but how does that change our behavior?
In terms of brand choice and purchase motivations, basically. So I think we're not spending less. I think all our research suggests that consumers are not spending less, we're just spending differently. And the types of experiences and brands we're choosing and we're spending our money and energy and commitment to have changed. And I think what's changed is that your purchase motivations have changed. So in the past, when price and quality have always been really important, and of course they remain important, but they're no longer the differentiating factors. So there are other factors that have come along and have made us all reconsider what's important to us. Things like health and safety, for example. Experiences, as you say, so, you know, ease and convenience, personal care, the type of service, do you know me well, where the product comes from, things like that have become so much more important in terms of the types of choices we make when we're spending our time and money.
Have you seen a specific brand or examples of brands or products go one of two directions, either take off in the past 18 months because suddenly we value them more, and maybe some that have maybe hit a little bit of some road bumps because maybe they're the ones we're reconsidering?
Without naming clients, you know, particularly.
general,
it's a general point. Look, I think what's happened is that most companies, when the pandemic hit, have decided that they're going to invest in upgrading their services to consumers. So they want to do what's right. Some people, I mean, you would have read it in the news, people like Louis Vuitton, for example, in Paris, they reconfigured the factory so they were producing hand sanitizers and you know, hand sanitizing gels and masks and things like that upfront. So moved away from the core business. So some, you know, banks have done services to help people through the difficult times. And once they set that bar up high, it's actually very difficult to go back from that because the sense of expectation that people have is much, much higher. So brands that have done well, that have gone out of the way to accommodate the change in circumstances. So if you were, for example, used to drinking on premise, so in a bar or a pub, some brands have gone out of their way to replicate the occasion and the experience at home. So, you know, they've provided the full experience at home, all organized virtually while people were in lockdown. And they've managed to therefore get an ongoing relationship and a dialogue with the consumer in a way that other brands maybe have not been able to do.
So I'd love to get your feedback on this, because a colleague and I have often laughed about this because we get the same emails from the same clothing companies. And one of them, through the past 18 months, has constantly said, dial up your glamour, date night outfits. And I'm like, where am I going? Like, who? Like, I don't know what. And it sounds so obvious when I say it to you, right? Like, we're both laughing about it, but they clearly, and they're not dumb people. I will never say that those, that they're dumb, but they're missing the mark so drastically. And their message has not changed in the past 18 months. Yet another clothing company has sales that have said, clothing from the waist up, right? Like, look good on camera. So they clearly got it, and we're still in it. We're not going back to normal. Like, there's a new world coming. So why, like, what advice would you have for those companies that are maybe holding on for dear life? Because I do, some are like, that's what they know. So that's what they do. Or some who are like, whoa, our consumer needs me.
I think my first advice is always reacquaint yourself with the consumer, because the consumer that you thought you knew doesn't really exist anymore. People have changed habits, have changed direction, and they're sticking with it. So attempts at personalization, like the email you're talking about, unless they're actually fine-tuned to the change in how people are, then they sort of come across as a bit silly, I think.
Well, they do, and I stopped buying from them, and we'll see if I go back. Because, and I used to buy from them all the time, and we'll see if I go back. I don't know. I feel like they so missed the mark on what was happening. Yes, and I don't know how you miss it, because it's kind of obvious, but... when you think about the top three drivers for purchase decision, and maybe this is at a macro level, maybe you can kind of drill it down to some segments, what are they? And the reason I'm asking is not just because I think consumers have changed at the high level, but if I'm a business owner, I lead a brand inside a company, to your point, the old consumer doesn't exist and I've got to reacquaint myself. But it's funny, when you're sitting in your office, that's hard to do. So when you think about purchase drivers and the research and the work that you've done, what rises to the top?
I mean, sustainability clearly in its various guises has come through as quite a strong driver of choice. So think about things like product origin, how transparent you are as a company. What are you clear about what your purpose is, and therefore are you living your purpose? So are you delivering against it? I think it's just, the pandemic has given us more time online, which has allowed us to look beyond the obvious. So we're no longer impulse buying in the same way in a, say, in a shop or something. You're looking behind the obvious stuff, and you're therefore thinking, does this matter to me? Does it fit with my set of values? Is the stuff they're talking about is differentiating important to me or not? So it's just an understanding, not just of how the consumer itself has changed, but understanding what's become more important, and accepting that transparency now is critical.
Yeah, I think, and I'd love to get your opinion on this too. I also think personal matters more, connection. I think we love being at home, generally speaking, but I think we also long for a connection. We just don't want to go back to the office to do it. And it seems like the brands that have made it more personal have won compared to the ones that have stayed kind of robotic.
Well, I agree completely. I think I get quite worried when people talk about marketing as communication, because that world has moved on, you know. It's about engagement. It's a two-way dialogue. Understand, respond, gauge their interest. Some categories are easy to do that with. If you're talking beauty, then you do engage. But if you're talking, you know, I don't know, dishwasher tablet, it might be more difficult. But genuinely, try and establish this two-way dialogue, I think, is critical.
So I want to ask you a little bit of a tangent, but it relates to this, because everything in the news these days has been, well, a lot of things, but one of the things in our world has been the great resignation, you know, as they call it, at least in the US, right? That's what we're really dealing with, is people are, as companies call people back to work, people are saying, whoa, I I want better benefits. I want more money. I want more flex time. I don't think, you know, there's some narrative out there that people are lazy or that they're entitled. I don't think that's it. I think it's a shot across the bow at corporate culture and kind of what's been done the same way for a long time. How do you think that impacts businesses and how we have to think about both our employees, but our customers? Because I think what's going on impacts all of it. It's not just in HR and hiring.
I agree with what you said. I think when you think about people having reconsidered their purpose, we're all consumers at the end of the day, and as employees, we've also reconsidered our purpose and what's important to us. I think marketing communities, everybody has been working really hard over the last 18 months, and I think we forget that we get the fatigue from the half an hour calls for 12 hours. You're extremely productive. We're all sitting here talking to each other all the time. And as the world starts opening up a bit, and I'm not saying going back to normal, because normal is going to be different, you're starting to think, actually, what do I want to be doing? And that's another piece of research completely, but we've seen the people who manage to create a sense of purpose and declutter the way they work, streamline a bit more, automate what needs to be automated, and building a sense of community is critical in terms of bringing teams together. And without doing that, it's very difficult to belong to a machine, which is what we all tether to most days.
Yeah, you know, I think your point is really important. I just want to take a second on it because I think we overlook it, but video conferencing and video everything has been amazing, and it is also exhausting. And I think we forget that in some ways more exhausting than in person for different reasons. And I do think we have lived in an age of kind of just sustained stress, and people are just like, we only have so much more that we can give at this point. Where do you think innovation, and when I say innovation, the way we describe it here is about thinking differently about what's right in front of you to create an advantage. So really more innovative thinking. How does that play into staying ahead of all this, of making sure that you're succeeding as things are changing?
I think understanding where your differentiation is going to come from and what matters to people is going to be really important going forward. It's always been important, but because the world has changed, it's sort of almost rebuilding your understanding is critical. Understanding how you're going to create this two-way relationship is important, but also understand what you don't need to carry on doing, because there's a lot of stuff that we do in our work life that's repetitive, and we've done it for many years in certain ways. Just consider what needs to happen differently, because that's maybe where the innovation is going to come from. Create the space for people to think differently and innovate.
So I love what you're saying there about giving people the space too. I was just this morning kind of having a conversation with myself as I was making my coffee about how, you know, we all get so cluttered with hold on to things because that's the way we've always done them. I think we get emotionally attached. Like we put all this effort into this, or we know how to do this, and now we have to do that, and we have to do it that way. And I think that's harder for us as humans. And by the way, I think as consumers, too, right? We've changed all of that.
We have changed. And I think in order to genuinely look at the way you shop and engage with brands and services, you have to reconsider the relation between the physical and the digital in a way that we've never considered in the past, because the totality of the experience that is what makes the difference is not just the way you've done it in the past. You communicate and then you go into a physical place and then come back again. It's just a seamless experience. And I think that's what's going to make a huge difference in the future.
So let me ask you a question on that then, because I know I struggle with this. I know a lot of people that I know in the business world struggle with this. How do you think about that relationship? Because it is drastically different. They're not separate anymore. So how do you think about it?
I mean, I think I've used the word dialogue before. I think involved consumers treat them as equals. In the past, at least when I was a brand manager, we were the brand custodians, and that's just no longer the case. I'm not sure who owns the brand anymore. It's a fluid, organic thing, and you're putting something out there and a sense of purpose and a commitment to what you stand for and what your purpose in your consumers' lives are. And they either engage with you and want to have that relationship and continue to build your brand for you, or they don't. So I think just think about this dialogue. How you can establish this two-way relationship is going to be critical.
So, you know, one of my favorite things that I've seen recently on TikTok is, so I could waste hours on TikTok. I don't post, but I love to scroll. And I'm actually shocked at how much, like, I've learned about cryptocurrency. I've learned about cooking. Like, I love TikTok.
Yeah.
But what I found super interesting to your point about dialogue is I've seen lately some product placement, some promotion, but it's very clear that the creative control is in the creator's hands, not the brand's hands. And it's done beautifully because it really does allow them to do what they do best, and the brand is part of that. And I think that I used to be on Madison Avenue many, many years ago, and that would never happen, right? You would never let creative control go like that. That's what you had a creative department for. That's why they were treated like they were special and made all the money. And to me, that's a whole new world of, hey, Naveen, I'm going to give you my brand and you do your thing, and we're in this together.
I'm not sure we have a choice. You either genuinely go with it and work it and make it work for your benefit, or you just sort of sit back and let it happen without your influence. And I think we don't have a choice. I think we have to engage on that level.
Yeah, it's been, I like to look at TikTok sometimes just for that, to see what product placement, it's not even product placement, I don't know what to call it, but it's such an interesting collaboration to me. And to your point, a really great example that we need to know what we stand for, so that when we partner with people or customers, that they know what we stand for too.
Absolutely, and I totally understand what you stand for, but one of the new purchase motivators is around product origin. And actually, just people like buying locally, people like to understand where it's come from, people like to understand whether people have managed it in the right way throughout the chain. So all of these things that are, probably we talked about them in the past, but didn't quite trace them in the same way before we made purchase choices. Right.
Well, and I think we used to make assumptions. Well, they'll just go to our about page and they'll read about us and that'll be good. I got a question in from the audience that I want to ask, because it was percolating in my brain too. It's a great question, Greg. So the question is, I love what you said about reconnecting with my consumer. Obviously, focus groups, ethnographies, things like that. What else can I do to just start the dialogue internally and reconnect with my consumer if I'm not ready for the big research project? Great question. How do you get that?
Yes, I think research has changed. There's just so much you can chatter that you can pick up online just from being part of consumer forums and all sorts of ways you can do it fast and on regularly, and just pick up what's being said. People hashtag, you know, brands all the time and services all the time. People talk about them on consumer forums, like I said. So just stay tuned to what's being said around you, because I think you don't actually need to do the old focus groups in the same way anymore.
So I have a huge bone to pick with focus groups. And I would just tell you just real quick, I love ethnographies because that's where you get the real deal when you go into people's homes. Yeah. And I, at one point, was going in to have breakfast with people for a project for General Mills. And it's my favorite example because we went in, we screened people for a healthy lifestyle. And I don't believe consumers are liars. I believe they put their best self forward. And she was sitting there telling us how healthy she is as she's spooning sugar right into her Cheerios. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, like, what is happening? Did we screen wrong? But as I got through the morning, I realized you got to look at the behaviors and how they view their behaviors, because it's all relative to them. So she absolutely was healthier than whatever she probably grew up with. It was just an amazing experience and realization that, I think to your point, we should be paying attention to what they're really doing and what the dialogue really is. But I think you nailed it when you said, watch the chatter. We can watch in a way that we couldn't before. So when I did those ethnographies, we couldn't find out by going onto Twitter. Now I can just go onto Facebook and Twitter and figure it all out, which is great.
It's just so easy. Just listening in is a thing now. You know, listening in online to what's being said about your brand is a thing. And it's just so you know, enlightening, actually.
Yeah, it really, really is. And to really think about and pay attention to what language they use, I think is... people in business, we sometimes take it and then put our language over it, but that actually ends up taking us, I think, 10 steps away. We need to keep their language.
I agree.
I want to ask these two questions in specific, because your everyday innovator style is futuristic, inquisitive. So you took the assessment before, and what that means basically is you innovate by taking today's problems and turning them into tomorrow's opportunities. You're really good at 10 steps ahead. And the inquisitive is all about asking questions to find the innovation deep, right? You dig deep, you challenge assumptions. So because of that, here are my two questions. One is, what do you think, looking forward, are some of the big challenges or opportunities facing leaders or businesses in the next 18 months? I think we spend a lot of time looking back, but I want us to look forward. I'd love to get your perspective on that. And then the kind of the second layer to that is, what types of questions should we be asking ourselves so that we're positioning ourselves correctly moving forward?
Interesting question. I think there is something about accepting that you can't do everything alone. It doesn't matter how big you are as a business. What I'm seeing some of the best companies do is look into the future and think about the partnership and the ecosystem they're going to be operating in, thinking about what they personally need to be doing and what a broader partnership with a wider group of companies or small companies will help them do. And I would include consumers and customers in that in a way, because I think the world we're in at the moment, you can't just do everything alone. So you have to be on the sort of front foot, shape a different future yourself, and take the right people with you on the journey.
So, you know, I really appreciate that, because I do think, and I've seen this time and time again, and I've been guilty of it in the past, we put up this funny brick wall between us and our consumers, and then because we want it to be 100% right by the time it gets to them. And it's been my experience, yeah, that the consumers or customers, whatever you call them, are really willing to go along for the journey with you if you listen to them. Yeah. And I think we have, because we're all trying to figure it out together anyway, I think we have more opportunity to trial and error than we've ever had in the past.
I agree. And you've got more opportunities to engage in a dialogue in a way that you haven't been able to do in the past. So use it. There are lots of open forums where you can engage people. But I'm also looking at partnerships between companies, you know, big and small, startups and big companies. You've seen lots of acquisitions in the past, but it's more about how do you create a new ecosystem where everybody's bringing the best of what they can bring to the table. Because I don't think the future is going to be one big company doing everything by itself.
So I really like that question for all of us watching, listening, reading later. That question of like, what ecosystem do I want to create? I think that's a very innovative way to look at it. Not what partnerships, what affiliates, right? What acquisitions, which really just says like you're gobbling it up, right? For distribution for customers. What you're really saying is an ecosystem where there's a reason for everything in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a very different way to look at it.
Yes, I think that's right. I don't think we'd be able to provide everything by one company. My only second thing is just think about your, I'm going to call it supply chain, but the whole thing all the way through to where it starts, because the purchase motivations that we've seen are really, traceability is going to be quite important in terms of you're being able to stand up and actually hand on heart say, yes, this is what we stand for, and this is what we've done to be able to make sure that it's genuinely delivered.
So this question just popped into my head. It's a little bit offsides, but do you like, so I was just reading this morning about the supply chain issues again, right? And materials and goods are going up, grocery store prices are going up, like fill in the blank. At what point does the consumer say I've had enough, and how does that impact the business and how we're supposed to operate? Because I may not have control over the ship sitting in the ports, right? Not able to get in, but it's my product that the consumer's not getting. So how do we think about that as business?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty difficult. What I've seen with a lot of our clients is that they're absorbing the extra cost and the extra time and compensating people. So I just think, consumers have long memories, and people will remember who stood by them and who offered the service and who helped them along the way. And it's not just financial, huh? It's just the service, it's the personal care that you develop. So my advice to business is that it might be expensive in the short term, but it's critical for the long term.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I hope some who have not delivered my goods yet are paying attention, because I just think it's like a catch 22 for all of us, you know, because I'm being told I have to start my holiday shopping now. It's not even Halloween. Are you kidding me? Because I may not get here. Like and at what point do I blame the situation, or do I start going, hey, listen, XYZ company, like I'm not buying from you anymore. I'm going local because I can, at least I can go down the street and get it. So
we're definitely seeing switching. We're definitely seeing people buying local and considering what they're going to spend the money on. Not just because of the supply chain, but because of the purpose piece, but the supply chain is really exasperating it.
In all the research and work you've done in the past, particularly the past 18 months, but in your career too, really, which is really fantastic, has there anything surprised you? Like, oh, I didn't expect that to come out of this.
What surprised me recently is people prepared to pay more for something, or a set of values that mean something to them. So I think they're not spending less, they're spending better on things that genuinely matter. And and someone who worked on laundry detergent a very long time ago in the past, I just never expected people to be paying more for something that they can't touch and feel. It's not luxury,
right,
but it's because it stands for something that is important to them personally. I think that's the surprising shift that I've seen post-pandemic.
Yeah, and some of that stuff is not what you would expect. Like, I guess sustainability, eco-friendly, right? That's been around for a little while now. It's been momentum and it started to matter more to people. But sometimes I find other things matter that I just find something like, oh, I wouldn't have expected. Have you found that? Like, I wouldn't expect something that goes on the radar.
Yes, I think how companies look after and look and have looked after their own employees during the pandemic has made a big difference. And I find that surprising. Yes, people care about the origin of the product or how well made it is, or, you know, traceability. But to actually think about, I don't like this company because I know they haven't given their employee an extra week's holiday compensation or something. I think that's surprising.
And to your point about transparency, you don't get to hide that stuff anymore.
No, it's out there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
You can't find
it. Which I actually think it is a good thing. I don't think it's bad. Yeah. So I know we're kind of running out of time here. So what's your final piece of advice for those of us looking to not just navigate, but hopefully harness kind of where we're headed and not just reactive mode, trying to catch up to the change that keeps hitting us in the face?
I would just say keep up with the change. And that means like just genuinely understand what consumers want, what they're after, how they're making their purchase decisions. Stay close to them, keep a dialogue going. And reconsider what you stand for and how you're going to bring it to life across everything.
I want to ask you a personal question on this because we were talking about brands and consumers kind of very high level. What are brands that you have found that you've absolutely fallen in love with and you will go out of your way to purchase, or you really like the way they're doing things in your life? I'm curious kind of because like you said in the beginning, we're all consumers.
So a couple of interesting ones, and a bit of a plug for them. There is a jewelry brand in the UK called Monica Vinader, which does a lot of recycled silver. Ooh. And I like how they've approached the pandemic because, as you said earlier, it's always been about we're doing our best to support communities in you know, poorer countries, basically, that can't afford it. We're doing this. We know you're at home, so why don't you just treat yourself to earrings because we know you're on camera all the time. You know, don't worry about the rest. But the way they've engaged and the way they've focused on specific topics that matter have really, really appealed to me. So I used to just buy their stuff in the shops and I now buy from them online. I never thought I'd buy jewelry online, but I am.
It's always interesting to me kind of what our personal brands are, because I think that speaks a lot to what, to your point, right, to what we value. They say if you look at your credit card statement, right, that's how you know what someone cares about.
Yeah. And I'm not spending less.
No, I'm not either. Pretty sure I'm spending more actually because I have more time to look. It's not good. It's not healthy at all, I think. But hey, it keeps the economy going, I guess. Have you found too that people are buying more experiences? And you know, part of the reason I ask is so I signed up for an Ironman. It got delayed. So I'm going and doing it in 2022, but I've noticed that they're selling out faster than they were when I first bought it, kind of, you know, a year and a half ago. And that to me has been a little bit fascinating. I was like, who are all these people suddenly traveling the world doing Ironman? It's like, what's happening? But I think it's because people are starting to value experiences and travel and things that maybe they thought, oh, I can just do later or another time.
I don't know about where you are, but I mean, I'm in London and I'm always surprised by how busy the streets are every time I go out. It was never quite that busy pre-pandemic. And I just think there is just appetite for doing things and throwing yourself into experiences and almost catching up on lost time, but also reconsidering your time. You know, again, I don't know about you, I hardly ever shop in a supermarket anymore. I have everything delivered. So yeah. People have reconsidered how they're spending their time, and experiences are definitely one in that context.
Well, I think we're seeing that in the US as well. I mean, the airports are slammed in a way that security now goes around in Denver anyway, around the corner and through baggage claim. I've never been more thankful for CLEAR and TSA in my life.
Yes.
But it wasn't like that pre-pandemic. Yes. It was busy, but it wasn't like that. So yeah. It's been an interesting reentry. Someone said, and I think you alluded to it earlier, we're not going to go back to normal. So it's the next normal. Like, we just have to figure out what's coming.
Exactly. And we actually don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know whether there'll be another pandemic, whether, I mean, just nobody can tell. So people are just spending their time in the way they want to spend it now.
So let me, can I ask you a question on that? And then I know I said I had final piece of advice and now I have like five more questions, but how do you, and what advice do you have for dealing with the fact that things are always going to be uncertain? I do think that, and it's been in some ways a good lesson. I don't wish it happened to us by any means, but the last 18 months have shown us that things can change and there is no certainty. And I think we have taken some things for granted in our lives and in work and with consumers and business and personally, that we now know, wow, this could happen again at any time, so we can't. What type of advice do you have for leaders to deal with that and deal with their teams dealing with that too?
I think this is going to be quite important. I think somebody said once on technology, this is the slowest rate of change in technology we'll ever have because it only ever, you know, speed up. And it's true of so many things. And when you're building capabilities now in an organization, I would say make it change ready, you know, so build things that allow you to flex and expect change to happen, but also have this constant listening in piece. And it's just the consumers to the market, to what's happening. So listening in is not that difficult anymore, but the chatter just gives you a real indication of where things are happening. You're able to react faster. So change readiness, and this is a cultural thing, not just a, you know, platform thing, is critical for organizations in my view.
I think that's very well said. So I'm just going to let you know my two big to-dos coming out of this pod. So thank you. One is I'm going to figure out my ecosystem because I realize I partner, I collaborate. I'm not sure I've really thought about the ecosystem. And when you said that, I thought to myself, how much stronger is an ecosystem against change, weathering things, than one person, one piece of the ecosystem, which is what I am right now. And I think that's a great lesson for innovators, for companies. And the other one is about where I should build more flexibility into my system so that we can adjust and adapt. I think we can, when I think systems create rigidity accidentally. I don't think we mean to, we need them, but that's fantastic advice to end on. So Naveen, thank you so much for joining me. That was wonderful. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tamara. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator Conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.